Welcome to the Wellness Renaissance Podcast, exploring topics to help you find the pieces that fit into your health puzzle.
I was trained mentally to view that person as a threat, a target, something that is someone that is trying to kill me. And it's kind of accurate in a lot of ways right. to think that way. But I got a lot of time sitting in the back of the truck thinking about it, to the point where it now is and was part of my mental processing to assess every single person for threat level and to actually have these thoughts about going all the way through with violence and being able to defend myself or people that I love or, I mean, just random people. So that major mental shift from 18-year-old quarterback mama's boy, small town man to I don't even know who I am and ready to all out throw down if need be. It's either a medicinal aspect where it could, because it's dissociative, THC is, so it's useful in letting people step back from problems instead of, oh, woe is me, I am this problem. There's the pain relief that can come from a high level of the psychoactivity. There could be the ability to move past memories because of that slight forgetfulness. So for that moment, the possibly veteran is able to move past that loop of I need to look for threat because they're forgetting about that for a second. And as long as you're approaching it with we're looking for the best outcome here, I think that's a healthy way to move forward with cannabis. And we can all agree that results in reality, when they're supported by the evidence that's going to be coming, it's going to be hard to argue with. And if you fight it, you won't be a part of it. And I invite everyone who is concerned about it to be a part of it and figure it out.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is Judy with Wellness Renaissance and the Wellness Renaissance Podcast. As you can hear, we have a lot to talk about today. The voice you just heard is John Moder, and I had the opportunity to sit down with him back on Veterans Day and have an amazing conversation about his journey going into the military, being deployed, and then eventually coming back home to quote-unquote real life. I can't imagine what that would be like. And you know, I'm honored that he sat down with me to share this story, his story, with me, with you, what that was like, what that felt like, and the resources that he found to help him find his way from I cannot handle this to I'm going to handle this. One of those big pieces to put his life back into place was and is using medical marijuana and CBD, and he's going to talk about that. He has become a champion and really wants to help people understand why this is a important option that we all need to understand better so we can go forward with this conversation about the acceptance of cannabis and shift our culture. So for the people who are using medical marijuana, for instance, that they might feel more comfortable and confident in their treatment. Think about it. If you had to have a treatment that helped you, that allowed you to get up, get out of the house and function as a sort of real human being, a put together, non-anxiety filled human being to be functional. And that tool was seen by so many other people as something unlawful or something wrong or something bad. And yes, one could stand on their own and say, hey, this is working for me. I feel the power. But you know what? Think about when we go out to a restaurant and we go with the idea of ordering a healthy meal and everybody else is ordering hamburgers and fries. Or the other way, we're the ones ordering hamburgers and fries when everybody else is ordering salads. That's tough enough. So imagine when there is a cultural stigma and a legal component to it as well. And he also talks about so many of the other things and people and resources that helped him find a new mindset to get back on track. So I encourage you, if you know somebody who's struggling with PTSD, with pain, if you know somebody who is a veteran, or if you're somebody that this whole conversation about medical marijuana and CBD and all that stuff is just kind of maybe you're feeling a little unsure about it, I encourage you to take a listen. This experience is pretty phenomenal, and I know that he's definitely not alone, but I know from having conversations with other people, there are a lot of people who really fear sharing this conversation, and those who are really suffering, who just haven't found a solution. So take a listen, pass this on to anybody who you think it might help. Know that John is out there for questions and answers and resource and support. And with that, I want to get you into learning about John and his experience.
Well, my name is John Motor. I am currently a father, a student, a business owner, a patient. That's my favorite way to describe myself, as well as a self-care medic, we can call it. So I've got a lot of things going on right now, but I'm a local kid who grew up in Renshaw. It's about 20 miles away from here, and joined the military after pretty much being involved in everything in high school. If there was something to do, I was so blessed to go to Renshaw. If there was something to do, I wanted to do it, and I was able to because of, well, we didn't have that many kids to fill stuff. So,
oh, wow, that's
I had
cool.
I had an early life ability to get myself involved in 100 things. So if it sounds like that's a pretty wide introduction, like, oh, that guy's crazy, he's doing too much, that's kind of how I grew up. I liked tying everything together. So that's who I am. I'm a person who likes to bring things together.
Okay. Well, hey, that's cool. I mean, that's a skill set. Right? Is how do you see all these different things and how they interconnect and how they can add and synergistically work together.
Yeah, it's a fun, I think it's a fun way to look at things too. I get to be more of the helper of the doers. Uh-huh. I get to do my own things, but I've always, I was called once the heartbeat of the team. The guy made the comment, maybe that might have hurt my feelings a little bit, to the coach. He said, yeah, that kid right there, he's not the best player on the court, but he makes the team way better.
Wow.
Because of being able to work with people. So
nice.
I've had a great time working with teams, and that's actually made it easy for me to choose joining the military. I was 17 years old, had to have my mother sign for me. My parents hadn't been together for quite a while. And my whole pitch was, if I sign now, Mom, then I'll get a whole year while I'm still in high school. I was a junior in high school. I just turned 17. And then that way, I probably won't get deployed, and there'll be a lower chance of anything happening to me. And she bought it. I guess that's a pretty common thing for recruiting tactics
military.
Now
really?
That I'm a little bit older, and I have some friends who are recruiters and kind of see into it.
Okay.
But it's an interesting proposition. Like, yeah, well, get them in right away with your permission, and that'll reduce the risk.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Fascinating.
But I did. That was one of the first times I really stood up for myself. I didn't want to join the military to be some hoo-hoo, rah-rah, blast them up. I mean, I love our country, and I think there's a lot of good stuff within the military. I knew I wanted to, quote-unquote, help people. And so the most direct way, I thought, was to be in some form medical personnel. And
okay.
I came in and said, I want to be a medic. Can I be a medic? And they said, no, you can't be a medic. And I said, why not? Well, there's no slots available. And I'd heard that from the Air Force and whatever. I mean, my scores were pretty good. They weren't the best ever, but I could have done most jobs in the military. And they said no. And I said, well, I'm not doing anything else. Well, you can be a Cav Scout and you get to ride in big thing. Like, that doesn't sound cool to me. I'm not your traditional. I scored on the ASVAB. They have this part about technical aspects. I scored the lowest on those mechanical.
Oh.
And my last name's Motor, and I don't know anything about cars. I'm still trying to figure out how everyday things work. Like, oh, what's the inner workings of this doorknob here? Locked out of the bathroom. Children, that happens quite a bit. So I'm learning and growing in that part. Both of my grandfathers built houses for a living, had this very tactile, physical labor. I mean, I did my fair share of helping out, but appreciated their eyes on it. So I knew I wanted to be a medic, and I wanted to help people. And I held out, and they ended up having a slot for me. So I went through my senior year, and it prepared me very well for going to basic training. It was basically a year of practice. So I showed up already ahead of people, which really helped, I think, develop a lot of skills, being comfortable with the day-to-day things of the military. I knew how to tie my boots and put on my uniform correctly, where the patches went. I'd done a mini boot camp for a weekend, and I had been saying the phrases and yelling the yells that you have to do, knowing how to stand, where to put my finger, all the small things I'd already practiced. So I got to come in and get to experience it for kind of the challenge it was on the leadership aspect, because it was all about managing a team and what was going on. Ended up doing pretty well through there, got an honor graduate, got promoted, went to medic school. I graduated on 9/11.
Oh, wow.
Yep, 9/11, 2009. And then went to medic school, which was in, and still is, in San Antonio, Texas. So Fort Sam Houston.
Okay.
Did not know what to expect. And it's funny enough that I picked a medic. I do not know why I did. Obviously, I wanted to help people, but I was terrified. It was convinced in my head. My self-belief was low, even though I had all these opportunities where I'd proven myself and had some successes. I don't know what the deal was. I could not figure out in my head how I was going to ever be able to save anyone's life.
Wow.
Anyone's, ever, be able to do my job. It was so big and so monstrous that it seemed impossible. And I don't know why. I just attacked it head on and tried not to think about it and just did my best. At a point, I got this thought through my head, what about this other thing that you've done? You didn't know how to do that at all until you practiced. And until you practiced. So this repetition, and even if I didn't believe in myself in the moment, I could see that I had done other things in the past that could lead me to be successful in what I was doing, which was a big part of me actually being successful in medic school. And I went on to, I messed up on one practical hands-on thing that kept me from top honor grad. And so I had little learning through failure and pretty rough moment in the history of John. There was some tears at that moment because I knew what was riding. And the things like that actually can push you and strengthen you up, because I was the class leader at the point. And the first day, we got all called into a group and they said, okay, last person was my name, and I was standing in the back, and they said, no, you're in the front. You got to go in the front. You're in the first person out of this next group. And the guy said, don't worry, you're not going to be standing there long. And I stood there, ended up having to be the class leader because I was in front of everyone, and ended up being the only one throughout the whole school who got to keep it the whole time. And I think that was due to me caring a lot about how things went in our class and maintaining a good standard. So I want to give a shout out to everyone who's served from this area on Veterans Day today. Happy
yes.
Veterans Day. I've seen in many instances that people from this area, whether they're active or National Guard, whatever branch of service, they have special qualities within them. So there's that for thanking them.
Nice.
But ended up learning a lot about myself through that school and knowing what it took to succeed and move forward in the military. Fast forward, after months of acting like an idiot, when I found out that I was going to be deployed, when I got done with my medic school, they told me right away, hey, you're going to be deployed. We got about a year prep. So what does a 18-year-old turning 19 do when they find out that they may be going somewhere where they may not be coming back? Well, they make a bunch of stupid choices, try a bunch of dumb stuff, and I'm blessed to come out of that unscathed, both physically, mentally, and legally, we'll call it. So I ended up going overseas. There was added element. I was a driver and a medic. So that was supposed to be something that was fixed by the time we got there. It didn't end up getting quote-unquote fixed until halfway through our time of running missions. So I did quite a few missions as a driver and a medic.
Oh, wow.
In a 5-point harness seat in a 60,000-pound vehicle. It's 13 feet tall and 16 feet wide. And I had almost flipped one in training, and I had just gotten my license the year before because the Army made me. So I wasn't very confident in that aspect. And then getting forced into that, that was probably one of the most stressful moments about being in that situation, not only being responsible for people's lives mm-hmm. as a medic, but the direct responsibility of the guy hanging halfway out the top, making sure that, well, we don't flip because I've right. seen what I can do in these things, and we're going way faster than we were in training,
wow.
allegedly. and things were a little bit crazier. So I had a couple of scenarios, some minor contact, we'll call it, nothing super crazy, but a couple things did happen, and kind of solidified the new reality in my mind. So one thing I thought while I was in medic school, I had a big debate about the Geneva Convention. I would definitely not kill an enemy combatant if I was in a position where we were no longer under fire or there was a threat, and I would provide medical care to this person. In my soul, felt it. No questions. I'm in the back of the truck in the second half of running these missions, and all I am doing is either thinking about the aftermath of an attack and doing my medical job, or so they called it soldier medic in medic school. You're soldier first and medic second.
Okay.
And the group I went over with actually very much so made that a point. I was trained mentally to view that person as a threat, a target, something that is someone that is trying to kill me. And it's kind of accurate in a lot of ways, right, to think that way. But I got a lot of time sitting in the back of the truck thinking about it, to the point where it now is and was part of my mental processing to assess every single person for threat level and to actually have these thoughts about going all the way through with violence and being able to defend myself or people that I love, or, I mean, just random people. So that major mental shift from 18-year-old quarterback mama's boy, small town man to
getting ready,
I don't even know who I am, right, and ready to all out throw down if need be to a level that I didn't even consider at all.
Something you didn't even know you had.
It hadn't manifested, right? And I haven't felt what those feelings of, and it's a lot of it's fear, and I'm not going to get into any kind of politics stuff, but at the end of the day, both people in that scenario, the opposing forces, are afraid of the other person taking their life. Mm-hmm. So it's came down to managing my fears and doing that by directing that energy into an aggressive, ready attitude, which doesn't apply super well. So that, in this day-to-day life, that ended.
Right.
All that combat stuff ended on the 18th of December in Iraq, closed down, and I had a few months left in Kuwait. Well, pretty much right after that, I went on leave back to Minnesota, and during that time, I sustained a TBI, a head injury, when I jumped into a lazy river at a water park.
Ooh.
And was unconscious, had
military is not going to take you out, but the water park.
That's, my mom was so furious. My mom was mad. My mom hated the whole situation. She regretted it from day one, signing me up. And then she did it for my brother, too. Luckily, he got out, and she didn't have to deal with him deploying, but she was so mad that that happened. But it also was, I was already at that point trying to, it was part partying, part adjusting to being home, but I knew that the way that I was feeling was a little up there. I was hyped up. I was not ready to engage with my friends or whoever I'm hanging out with. So drinking was kind of
the go-to. Cope with that?
Just to remove, like, oh, I'm partying.
Right.
This isn't going on.
So how do you, like, I mean, what does that, and tell me if I ask anything you don't want to answer, because it's totally cool. But how does that, like, how does that manifest in your head? Like, I mean, I've heard people talk about that in just that it's such a different mind space when you come back to real life and you're so used to looking at everything as assessing it for a threat and everybody you're assessing it for a threat. And all of a sudden you have to deal with people on a normal level. I mean, what, you know, like you said, you kind of went to partying as kind of that way to balance that out, I assume. But what is that like, realizing that as you're kind of sitting there? I mean, how much is it you realize what you're doing it, and how much is that you don't really realize that you're doing it, but you know that you need to cope differently somehow?
That's pretty much exactly how I've broken it down after moving through it a few years. So that partying, to segue, continued for the next 2 years, and I did the latter. I didn't deal with it. I didn't acknowledge anything. I was supposed to have a quote-unquote a warm handoff with the VA. That was the only thing I said medically, that I hit my head. I don't know what it's from, but I feel different. I feel angry. And so with TBI and some different stuff tied together in that mindset returning home, what I thought then was, I need to feel some other way. That's about all the depth I went to as a young kid. And I think the whole shock of everything, if I were maybe a little more like that naturally, if I was a little harder and a little more aggressive, and it wasn't such a, and I mean, I had my aggression and I, whatever, but that's not who I was. That's not how, what I put forth and continuously thought about. So it was a big flop, and I just had to block it out. I couldn't deal with it, and I couldn't deal with the moments where I was unable to control it, and I'd have my fist through a wall or going into arguments. I never physically hit anybody or did anything like that. So that's, I mean, that was beyond, I probably honestly would have killed myself if I got to that level, because that was part of my stage of things, not being able to feel like I could have any impact on, like, there's no thought of progress. There was not even an understanding of what was going on. So when there's no awareness of the situation, when I'm not asking questions that are good, all I could think about was trying to get away from it. And it's super self-destructive. And so after a period of time, a few years, it was 2 years solid where I was trying to live this life of, oh, I'm going to school, I have kids, or I'm still in the military, and oh, I got promoted, and oh, I'm this high performer and I can get stuff done. And that wasn't how it was turning out entirely. I'd try and piece it together where, it, oh yeah, see, I'm doing good, I'm doing great, here I am, I'm at school, it's an awesome time, and I'm helping friends, oh look, I tried to make it look like everything was good, and then I'd be getting super drunk. So what happened was I was trying to play Superman and Hero, so my UFC debut was a kind of a rescue attempt. I was really intoxicated and saw this big guy strutting over to, I don't know how I was aware of it, but there was a fight going on with a kid I knew, and he was tiny. And so I can't tell you the thought process. I remember running up, Superman punching him in the head. We get entangled. It's, I think, January or February, 2014, something like that, or 13 maybe.
Okay.
We end up falling. He's a big guy, and I think there was a frozen chunk, and it separated my left acromioclavicular, so the AC joint, to the point where my arm was just hanging there. And I knew right away, it shocked me out of being drunk.
Right.
And the guy kind of woke up. He's like, someone jumped me, someone hit me. And we're entangled on the ground. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what happened. And I can tell, like, this dude would destroy me if I had to do anything. I was in so much pain. And he ended up getting up and walking away. And my friends got me to my house. And I didn't want to go to the hospital. I was still in the military, and I didn't want to get in trouble. And I just kind of came to, like, oh, man, you're dumb for doing that. What really did it for me, though, was the 30 days that I got. I got pills, I think, supposed to be maybe 60 days or so. I used them within 10 days, and I hated pills. I had a big natural, do-it-yourself, don't take aspirin even, just deal with it. And I found the next level of getting away from those feelings. I went through those pills so fast, and I sat my little victim self on the couch, and I, oh, this was great. I got to be feeling bad about myself, numb, and it gave me an attitude, so I was expressing myself. And so I had this, like, oh, this is, yeah, listen to me. I'm feeling good about what's going on here, and there's no problem. Like, I didn't feel like anything was wrong with me at that point. Well, I ran out of pills, kind of wide-eyed. Oh, crap. Called the doctor. No more pills. And I had all sorts of recovery left. I was still in a sling. A massively atrophied arm. Had a little twig arm. I went from 120-pound dumbbells bench pressing. I worked out 2 or 3 hours at a chunk when I could while I was deployed. And I'm 155 pounds of solid me right now. I weighed 180 pounds when I was deployed. I ate thousands of calories. And then now, not only mentally, but physically, I and will, determination, strength, every value from the military was just gone from me. And I looked at myself, which I think is really important for people to do. I didn't have a choice because I was fiending for pills. And just that made me start to question, like, oh, is that really what you, how you want to feel? You really want to, that's who you're going to become? And then started thinking about my son a bit. He had some health struggles with milk intolerance or allergy. He had different things. He's seven. He just grew out of it to where he doesn't react and have kind of flu-like symptoms.
Nice.
He's really consistent. So, yeah, he's been exploring and having a blast. But so we were trying to make some health changes. I had when I first got back, the mother of my son had a two-year-old daughter, and we formed a family. So I had some people that I needed to make some changes for. After I got this mirror view of myself, I found some strength in being able to make a few changes for them. And that kind of pushed it forward where I was angry now. And maybe it wasn't like a great directed anger where I kind of went into my rebellious phase. I was just getting out of the military. And when I did, I grew my hair out long, and it kind of spurred this discovery journey. And I got extremely deep into my own spirituality and tried to discover all of these different health routes I could take and different habits that I could initiate or choices. So really what that, now looking back, kind of seeing how the cards have laid and different choices that I've kept and left, what I was doing was attempting to regain control and direction in my life as my new coping.
Okay, sure.
So I went from, I can't handle this subconsciously, I need to get rid of it, to, I'm going to handle this, what do I need to do?
Uh-huh.
And so looking at different things that I could do, slowly over time, over the, I'm going to do my own rehab, and I'm going to the pool, and I'm working out with foam weights, and I'm getting in front of people in public, which I isolated pretty severely. So my symptoms were isolate as much as possible. When I tried to do things, go all out into them and be my best self for as long as I possibly could hold that up. And at any light of who I didn't want to show people, I left and cut off contact. And I still have aspects of that today that I deal with, and owning a business and going to school and trying to be the person I want to be. That's something that I have to address, that I either have to verbalize maybe what's going on with myself and let people know in a way that's not putting myself down and taking away my own power, but being honest with what I'm able to do, including getting this podcast done. I mean, that this is not the first time I should be sitting in this chair. And that kind of played into it. But what happened is I, over time, made enough mistakes and was willing to try and understand. I wanted to understand. That was my obsession. I was lucky enough to hear some kind of metaphysical type motivational speech talking about how you can help shape your reality through your perception of it and focusing on yourself and developing yourself. So I had this empowerment of, I can do this. And now hanging out with my psychology friends, it's a self-efficacy, your own belief in what you think you are able to do. And during those 2 years, I had no belief in myself. I'm going to buy a really nice car when I get back. I'm going to put $10,000 down. Pff, no problem. I saved that. That's not even my whatever money, you know, thinking I was a big shot. I had to turn that car in a couple of years later because I couldn't make the payments, and I owed more than what I owed that first day after I put that payment down.
Mm-hmm.
I got kicked out of my apartment. I got evicted. After not being able to pay for it, I sat around and felt like I couldn't do anything. I did have a few car sleeping moments, but it's not as bad as most people who are having a homeless situation. I had a displaced homeless situation for a year and a half with two kids and a fiance at the time, where she's trying to work and make money, and I was doing jack nothing. And that was kind of through that growth phase. And I think a big part of it was what I'm working on and have been, even thinking back now, is acceptance. So I was I was going through this cycle of rage and this power struggle with myself where I would get so angry at my inability to be the person who I was and who I, in my head, knew I was. And it was more result-focused and kind of specified into actually being, in some non-translational way, that same person.
Uh-huh.
Instead of taking the principles or core values of who I was or what drove me to be that person and then applying it to this kind of new vessel. And yeah, maybe I didn't have the struggles that I have now then. And that's what allowed that strategy, those approaches on top of those beliefs to work or those values to work. And I have to try a little harder.
Well, it's so interesting because I think, you know, you come home and you've been trained, but you haven't been really untrained.
Yeah, that's right. Not possible.
You're kind of, well,
yeah, let me take that back. Immediate, go ahead.
Right, well, but you're kind of tossed back into the world. Mm-hmm. And there's no, yeah, I'm trying to find like an analog situation that we have of it that you know, you're kind of your own little island, right? Like, I don't know if you had other people around you who could identify or who could recognize that same feeling, but then could they articulate? You couldn't even articulate it.
2 years I pushed away any other veteran.
Right.
2 years. I did not want to associate with even thinking about a connection to the... I got a throat tattoo in my mind to protect myself from being put back into a situation that I was not able to recover from immediately. Whatever combination of that head injury and my experiences led to me not feeling capable, definitely not feeling capable enough to be in the military or perform in any way, to where I had to, I can't do any of that. And that was a big step for myself too.
So you're not, at that point in time, you are your own little island, and you're trying to keep everybody away from getting on your island.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a huge thing. I mean, again, that's what we hear about and talk about when we hear about veterans coming home, that there is no like transition back. What are you supposed to do with that? I mean, that's crazy to have to figure that out on your own. I was listening to a guy, I work with men's groups, and one of the guys was talking about how he likes going and hanging out with, now after some time has happened, but he likes going out and hanging out with the veterans because they love having more people to talk to and intergenerational. And he's like, I don't have anybody else to talk to about this stuff. Like, it's such an odd experience that civilians can only understand it on a pretty minor level. And I was listening to him talk, trying to think like, what could I think of in my own experience like this? And I said, I recognize this is nowhere near the same, but so that the thing that I kind of can at least sort of relate to is living in India for 6 months. Mm-hmm. And then coming back to the US and wanting so desperately to share this, just download everything, right? And you can't, because you can't explain things in words well, and they just can't quite understand it. And it's like, it's weird because you feel, why can I not cross this bridge? Why is this bridge not connecting? And looking back on it, I kind of get it. But that listening to him talk was like, that's how I felt when I came back from India. You know, so it's, again, not the same.
But you can use that as a foundation to, I can maybe connect maybe yourself and anyone who's listening from that to maybe how I felt, and that's all I can speak for, but I've hang out with a lot of people who've come back. Let's say that same feeling and attach something extremely negative happened while you were in India. Maybe you did it. Maybe you watched something you didn't do something about. Maybe action, inaction, moral injury, seeing something, whatever, and then not knowing or wanting most times to share any of that. So it's kind of, you're at the same time, because I could talk with somebody, if you were another veteran and you went through something with some kind of combat situation, or we were even joking about violence, it would feel much different than someone who is unable to relate to that. And so even if you aren't past that aspect of it, the way that you approached violence or how you made do with everything mentally, then you don't want to talk to anybody about it, because if you can't understand what that was, because it was like that, a blink, it's moments just slammed into these intense, it's like you're jacked up on coffee in a shortened day and sleep's just kind of a blink, and then you pop back up and you fly through all this stuff happening. A few little things happen where time slows down and some stuff goes on, and then it's like, okay, I'm sitting on a cot now, and I'm tired, and I'm hungry. And then you get up and fly all over again.
Uh-oh.
So it's just these little compressed moments that have tons of meaning on them, and you have to, I've found it's helpful at least to apply those questions to that stuff. So I've, through listening to people in just general self-development, in the general self-development world, a lot of questions. My two goals of coaching, raise awareness and responsibility. And I think besides coaching, I think in life or as a person, especially looking at self-care and being your own medic, would be to raise your own awareness about yourself. It's your primary job to make sure that you as a body and mind and spirit or whatever beliefs you have is moving in a direction that supports the health of it, just as a baseline, or wow, do not take steps without being aware of what's going on there, because you are negatively impacting everyone in your life if you're not focusing on that. And that's what gave me the kind of strength with having my children as a model. Finally, a jawless chewing tobacco ad got me to quit the habit that I started in the middle of my deployment, threw in the grossest tasting thing ever. It was a peach skull dip to connect with someone, because I wanted to connect with someone on a, I don't know, it was just, I need to do this right now and I'm doing it. And it wasn't even necessarily, oh, you're a wimp, because I didn't, I had 180 pounds. I was feeling pretty good about myself and didn't need to prove to anybody anything. But I had this connection moment and it relieved some stress. And then from that gross, near puking moment, I forced some form of chewing tobacco in my lip to the point where I could stand doing the same thing over and over, brought that back with me for 2 years. And that was a major crutch from the moment I woke up to the moment I went to sleep. I had one or more pouch chewing tobacco and saw that reality. And I think it all came together, and I'm still going through this where I'm feeling good enough about myself, we'll say, and it sounds kind of lame to put it that way, but feeling that I have enough value and worth to invest the time it takes to heal or start or stop some of these habits that are serving me or not serving me. And I feel good about making that choice, and partially for my son, but for myself too. Oh, I'm not a slave to this.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling like that's all I can do. That's kind of a way that I felt with cannabis. So I used that from the moment I got back. I'd be smoking for 2 weeks, and I'd quit for 2 weeks. And I'd go, because I'm to drill. I had a year left of military service when I got back. And that's how I kind of managed my way through that. Still trying to perform, had that shoulder injury in the middle of that last year, and utilized that to be just a, lack of a better term, a shit show of a soldier, a soup sandwich. And so it was even more demoralizing to me that I was being recognized for my prior service through promotion at a young age of 20 years old. I just turned 21 and I got promoted to E5 sergeant, so a leadership position. And I felt like I was in the worst shape overall of my life, not necessarily only physically, but I felt like there's no way should I be getting promoted or being recognized. So that kind of shook me a little bit to get back into it. I had a month-long break from my habits and mind, and I went to Utah and did that training, and that was kind of a reset and gave me some more strength. And I just kind of looked for opportunities to improve that sense of I can get it done, and that's been kind of my journey. And it's not all one-dimensional. You can't just say I'm gonna attack it from this angle and then think it's gonna work itself out.
Right.
So, well, we're complex.
Right. So you've got all these things going. I mean, like, you know, go back to your self-efficacy, that you're taking all of this stuff in and you're grabbing probably little pieces of it at a time. What can I grab onto? What can I do? You know, that's always a big process.
I started reading a lot.
Yeah.
Books on what I call how to think.
Okay.
And just looking at different ways how people tend to think, and if those ways of thinking are leading to the results they want, because we can only go where we aim, and kind of our thoughts and overall mindset are going to aim. Because if I thought, oh, I don't want to share anything, it's going to feel whatever negative thing I could have thought about this would have possibly led me to not coming here. Even if it's something like it's not really, let's say the time when I was supposed to connect and come before, thinking if it were in front of me, presented as a regular problem, like, oh, if you don't, what's the worst that's going to happen if you go here? That's not how it's presented, because then I would be able to think about it. It's this creeping up of I can't handle it. So it's this constant, there's too much chaos, or you won't be able to. Because that was a big thing while I was deployed is, again, even though I had kind of conquered my fear of becoming a medic, did really well in the live training. We had some really cool medical training right before we deployed. Did perfectly fine, proved myself. I got a little award for taking over this training thing and doing really well. Had all these things saying, proving possibly to someone, hey, you're capable. Mm-hmm. And I still took it as such a heavy burden to have the lives of other people dependent on me. I puked before every basketball game and at every halftime out of, I think, nervousness and anxiousness to perform well.
When you were younger?
When I was younger.
Oh, wow.
And okay. So that having people's lives in my
right?
hand.
Right?
I did feel capable enough to get off my butt and do it and do a good job. Just that.
But you took that very seriously. That was a big, yeah.
Wow. That life or death aspect of I need to feel totally confident and capable or I'm not going to do it. And that's just something I'm trying to smash because that's not how it works, especially if you are already dealing with something, whether it's physical or mental health-wise, that you are constantly having to work with, that plays in physical, plays in mental, no matter which side of it is. It's this whole picture of total health. And so you're everyone, not just me, not just you, is dealing with these different things that are inputs on their life. And so having to be okay with, well, I'll figure it out because I'm not going to die if I make a mistake here or I have an opportunity to learn.
Right.
So after this, I'd be willing to say that hopefully I can move in the right direction if somebody else ever reaches out to me, and that'll be a little step. And I have done many things in order to get myself here, and that's something that I've really latched on to as well, small victories, small wins. Mm-hmm. Take the first step. One of my digital mentors, I've been looking for a phrase, there we go, I'm going to coin that.
That's a good one.
Yeah, one of my digital mentors, Jocko Willink, he's a former Navy SEAL, and he responded to his combat experience. It made him even better. So it's kind of, not saying that's the opposite, not saying it made me worse in any way, but I definitely had some struggles moving through it. So I think I've been taught to model things that work as a great way to figure out your own take on it by seeing someone who's actually doing it correctly. And his little phrase is step, go, one of them. He's got a bunch of little simple things that he says. But if you're ever wondering what to do, that's the answer. The thinking about it, more often than not, unless you've not put any thought, care, and any prior prep into it, is the thoughts are already there and you know what to do. Mm-hmm. You just need to do it. And when it comes to your health, nobody's going to do it for you. And nobody was going to take me to the VA to get through that disability system or even the medical system. Nobody was going to take me to go talk to other veterans. No one was going to ask me if I wanted to maybe utilize this plant in a different way. And so with that, that's been a big part of my mindset shift, has been utilizing cannabis as a natural and consistent way to help me facilitate a smoother mindset. I call it in mood stability, because I'm in the Minnesota medical program, and they ask me, what are your benefits? And list them in order of relevance to you or importance. And I think that's the number one thing, but that wasn't always the case, and it took research on my own part and questioning things, including my own beliefs. When I first started using it, when I got back, I wasn't under the impression I was doing a medical activity. I was doing a stress relieving, I called it, it made me. It allowed me to be social again. It allowed me to reduce that overall anxiety piece, if I was using it correctly and in the right mindset. So that I definitely misused it. It played a role in some negative aspects of thinking or action, as can everything. But that's not just plant, that's mindset and how I'm utilizing it.
So you kind of came through this process of you knew it helped you. Cannabis was helpful for you to function. You calmed you. It allowed you to be, like you said, to be social.
And thinking I'm a criminal.
Oh, okay, right, because that's
what a lot of it, that's what did me in and kept me at this level of what I'm doing to make myself feel in a way that I can do better makes me think that I'm someone who doesn't deserve good things because I'm
You're using something that is a criminalized substance, but it's the thing that's also helping you function. Mm-hmm. So that is an interesting thing when we think about that mindset, right?
How does that help you? You're not open to receiving any benefits.
Well, you kind of almost can't because, I mean, you can receive the benefits from what you're taking, but there's this reservedness that you have.
Placebo is 30%, and that can be used positively as well.
Right,
it should always be positively used.
Placebo.
Always believe in what the treatment you're doing to the point where if it doesn't work, don't use it anymore. Right. But you should have some energy put into it.
Right, right. Well, and it's the mindset about that thing that you're doing, whatever it is that you're doing. If you have a positive mindset about it, it's just like anything else, right? It's going to affect how you do it, you know, whether it's a spelling test or whatever, you know, it's how's it going to go for you? At least how are parts of your brain working on that? So, yeah, I think that's an interesting point when we talk about the legalization of medical marijuana and the stigma that sits around it for people who are fully legitimately using it, like using it. They've got everything. The gentleman that I had that was a cannabis farmer talked about, and I've heard this from him and I've heard this from other people, where somebody in the hospital is totally got all their paper. They've got everything. They're totally a legit medical marijuana user. And then something happens to them. And then the hospital wants to put them on opioids. And they're like, dude, I have this thing that actually helps me that I was addicted to that. I got out of that. This has been helping me. Let's use this. And they say, oh, nope, sorry. That's not going to work. We're not going to let you do that here. And again, it's just continues that stigma and continues, even though you are totally legit. I mean, just thinking about that in conversations that I've had with people who kind of quietly sort of say, but I'm legal, you know, but I have it, but I got, and it, but they feel so bad. So you kind of don't get to fully participate in your own treatment.
In treatment or in sometimes in your life, you have to mask half of it, which doesn't lead, you're not Batman. No one's going to hold that up for an extended period of time, lying to people when they're in intimate relationships, whether it's just close coworkers or whoever. They don't feel that they can, it's not like you need to disclose, but if it's just regular day-to-day life stuff, to normalize it is to be able to talk about it and not to feel like you can't talk about it. Because it even feels weird, like, how do you describe the hesitancy? But you indict yourself federally if you say, I utilize marijuana or cannabis or whatever you want to call it. And the big change for me, I remember it. I was lucky enough, my friends, when I got back, they're in the cannabis industry, they're woodworkers, and they make little storage boxes with a glass pipe that pops out of it, little, they're called dugouts. But anyways, they've been in that cannabis sector, and what that allowed me to do was to, and I did a little bit of work stuff with them, go to Colorado the year they legalized recreationally and go to the first cannabis cup they held there. And it wasn't the, oh, I'm gonna get loaded on everything and oh, it was such a, that changed me, although I did that. What changed me was one of the interactions with a medical doctor. And it wasn't until after I got home, because we were there and took a, what's called a dab or a cannabis concentrate, vaporized it on a heated glass rig, they're called, and then inhaled it and then blew it out and said, in my medical opinion, that is the only way anyone should use cannabis. And I was sitting there and something rang in my head, like, medical doctor, like, this guy's got to be a joke. Well, he handed out this DVD. I had no idea what it was. He was there with some 420 football team marketing. I had no idea what he was there for. We actually kind of snuck in, ended up getting passes, but we were hanging out at this booth. We had no idea what it was. And then we saw this doctor, and I watched the video of what he did when I got home, and the guy is talking about extremely advanced, high-level biomarker recognition for a specific type of cancer to a designated audience of high-level medical professionals. I don't know why he was handing these out. And I looked him up, and it was somebody who performed in life. And I think people need to see, even if you are living the opposite of the stigma as someone who uses medical cannabis or uses whatever treatment that you use and you feel like, oh, people say it doesn't work or people say this about it. And even if you're living the opposite of that, you will demean and slow yourself down to kind of fit that as your reality. Like the 4-minute mile was unbreakable until someone broke it, and then high school kids are running it. That's because people set up limiting beliefs, and my limiting belief as a cannabis user was, I am a criminal. I am doing something destructive to my body overall. I didn't believe it, but I did at a core level because I wasn't living opposed to that, and I'm limited in what I can do with my life, but I feel better, so that's all. I'm good there. I'm good there. And I can, you know, do a little bit of stuff. But seeing a doctor, even in that way, use cannabis, just blew my mind open to this. I am going to change the way I think. And really it was, I'm going to change everybody's mind around me so that I don't have to be embarrassed about talking to my grandma. I don't have to sacrifice a relationship with my grandmother or grandfather or anyone else in my family who might have a problem and maybe don't even have a problem, but I'm so worried about what I'm doing that I ignore them. I isolate from them. I don't participate in day-to-day functions. I don't get involved in anything. I was involved in, like you said, everything I could. I was involved in nothing for years. Nothing.
Wow. And that was what a shift that had to have been on your brain of just being part of everything and then all of a sudden, boom, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
And then that was kind of along the way. So it wasn't this direct, like, I changed. It was part of already figuring out that. And I mean, there are times where I'd thought in my head, okay, I'm going to do something else besides this because I don't want to be a drug user.
Mm-hmm.
And even a lot of people might say, well, couldn't that make some of your symptoms worse? And I hear that all the time from good-meaning people who maybe have done a little bit less research than I have. But what cannabis has been shown to be is called bidirectional. So what that comes down to is anything it can help, it can possibly make worse. So it's a very individualized medicine because the system that it interacts with, the endocannabinoid system, is individualized, and what tweaks you have genetic or epigenetic wise, so your life, who you are, is going to help change in some way your endocannabinoid system. So 2 weeks from now you might interact with the same strain or variety in a negative way, or the environment you're in, which all this stuff is studied in psychology, like with drug users, how the environment plays into it. And I think a lot of the anxiety people get from cannabis, and not all of it, because THC has been shown on its own to do that, to, in some people, give them anxiety, and at probably way too high doses, because mm-hmm. you can get therapeutic benefits from sub-psychoactive levels. So you don't have to get high or party with cannabis to receive medical benefits. And in fact, if you eat the leaves or eat the buds or utilize the acidic forms, you're not getting any kind of psychoactivity. And so there's medical options outside of psychoactivity, mm-hmm. but I'm in the camp of, we can't separate stuff out and we need to be holistic in the way we look at this and allow different parts to be utilized in a healthy way, looking at the results of what happens, not what we think is going to be wrong with that situation. Like, oh, you're using this, we know what this does, and so that's going to happen to you. Well, if it doesn't happen and the opposite happens, what about that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't have any evidence showing that, and that's just anecdotal and clinical notes, or that doesn't work. But my mindset was medical, so now when I approached it, I came with this thought, I want to find cannabis that gives me a medical style relief. Now I'm no longer looking for this separation from my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking to embrace them, engage with them, discuss with myself, maybe ask some questions and figure out, why am I acting like this when I'm in the car, or when what makes me so upset, and kind of breaking back to things like different moments that had some significance in my deployment. Able to, an introspection is a side effect and a symptom of cannabis. So if you're afraid of yourself,
go drink
alcohol, leave yourself alone. Cannabis will make you think about what's going on. And that's not just my opinion. That's kind of put out there in some literature too, looking at questioning nature of things. But I found myself thinking, how can I improve myself? And that hadn't happened. That was one of the hangups. I couldn't simultaneously use cannabis and really care about myself and my health and future, mm-hmm. because of that belief. And just seeing someone kind of shook me out of it.
Wow,
and so that's a big part of what I'm trying to do now, and I don't make it a direct attack on things. I like to actually be a representative of the way I think cannabis can help people. And I do that by being a more authentic version of myself and challenging myself and not treating it ever as something that's holding me back. And so if I don't look at it that way, it's not impacting me that way. And then I can see, okay, maybe I should introduce a longer lasting oral route. So the Leafline Labs, the one of two Minnesota medical cannabis companies, that's the one that I'm getting products from.
Okay.
They have an office in Hibbing, Egan, St. Paul, and St. Cloud. They have something that you can drink, and when you drink cannabinoids, they convert to a different metabolite and stay in your system longer.
Oh, interesting.
And have a different, it's like the extended release, basically, when you inhale it, either vaporization or combustion smoking. It's going to be a big spike in your blood level and then a pretty rapid lowering of the overall perceived effects of that initial THC bump, because it's and that might sound like, oh well, these people are getting spiked and high. It's just the blood level more than the I'm high and then I'm low. That feeling is whatever you want to relief level. If it's pain, it might be a little bit more, could be called stone. And I think these terms really lead to non-medical way of thinking of things, and it's easy to break it down and throw stones at it and associate it with any kind of cartel or druggies or stoners or hippies, whatever you want to associate it with, to demean it as a way for people to heal. And then you start to believe it yourself. So really, always framing it and being honest too. Is my approach, my use, as it could be called, is it helping me? Is it leading to me becoming more functional? So adding that extended release was a way for me to explore not relying so heavily on a vaporized form of it that has that kind of spike and then kind of goes away and fades into the background. That can be helpful, though, if you need rapid relief and you want to skip the digestive system. That's a good way to deliver a medication. Well, what about your lungs? It used to be prescribed for people who had asthma and COPD. It's a bronchodilator. THC and CBD both are.
Okay.
And they've been shown to be expectorants as well, so to get rid of phlegm.
Okay.
And have been seen to possibly positively interact with different lung conditions. Obviously, if you're inhaling extremely burnt or super hot material, that's going to play an effect in it. So again, appropriate medical approaches. The vaporizer pen that I have in my jacket pocket isn't going to burn my throat ever. So if it's ever about safety and concern for the general public, it should be a movement towards the ability to control this as an option for people. And Minnesota's pretty hardcore. It's the most strict medical program or cannabis program in the country.
Oh, really?
Okay. By far. It's a two-company system that are both kind of tied into a state system that highly controls both what qualifying conditions as well as delivery options, meaning you can't have different, called flower is how it's referred to in the cannabis industry, but buds or grinded up leaf material. So it's where the cannabinoids and the terpenes and the different attracting chemicals and has other benefits to the defensive benefits of the plant too. That's where all that gathers and then it gets cut off. And the benefit of that is it comes with its own variety. So you have your different, oh, this is the daytime, the nighttime, the pain, the anxiety. That's not how they're specifically laid out. But if you can see a trend in one, it's beneficial to be able to give a patient something that's been shown to benefit their specific condition more than a random one. And that's kind of what's going on in Minnesota, is we have a random terpene profile.
They
just inject, after they do two forms of extraction for the oil, basing a lot of their, I think their capsules, it's the base for most of their products. It's double extracted, purified, which leaves it as just THC. So they've been, they're aware, which is good, of what's called the entourage effect, which Ethan Russo, I can't remember where he's from, but he worked with GW Pharmaceuticals, the developers of Sativex and Epidiolex, the two internationally legal, and Epidiolex being legal in the United States, whole plant cannabis medicines. Epidiolex is the CBD one that was approved for Dravet's syndrome, Dravet's.
Okay.
It's a seizure.
Oh, okay.
It's the only whole plant cannabis product that's allowed in the United States federally.
Okay.
It passed the FDA. And it actually has 1% THC, which is more than the allowed 0.3%, which within the hemp, industrial hemp world that my CBD company falls into. But that's another story. So there's this, not lack, but kind of homogenous, one-size-fits-all approach being done in Minnesota. You have a full THC, half and half CBD, THC, and then full CBD.
Okay.
And it's not entirely condition-dependent. People can get on the program, and it's kind of once you're on the program, you have access to everything. So I have PTSD, and TBI is my qualifying conditions, and I can get like pain cream. and I can justify that through reducing headaches, through neck tension, or whatever. But I think having more of an open, at least open to exploration and open to research and open to test, I'd guinea pig myself out so fast for the sake of science and cannabis. I know it's really heroic of me, but honestly, there are some people who are really scared and of both legal repercussions, social repercussions, physical repercussions, and then just that unknown of what if it doesn't work, or what if it does bad things, or what if I get addicted.
Well, and isn't it interesting how, in my mind, certainly I am definitely aware of those concerns people have, but I'm always fascinated when something over the counter is just fine, you know, and it's like how many people ended up taking opioids versus, say, trying something like this because, well, this could, marijuana could get me addicted. Marijuana could do bad things to me. And then all of a sudden, well, the lovely industry that is supposed to take care of you is totally making you addicted, doing exactly, they're harming you. And it's so interesting. I mean, I think it's fascinating that it has taken so long to look at medical marijuana. I mean, it's obviously, in my mind, and I'm sure I'm just cynical to an extent, is that there had to be, there was money to keep it out of the system somewhere along the line. There just is. And because there's so many people who have benefited from it. And yeah, and it's kind of like, okay, well, we know there's this benefit, so why not learn about it and let people utilize it? So we have to sort of, in my mind, and this is a Judy thing, we have to sort of remember that all of the stigma bullshit is given to us to put on in so many ways. It's something we could just let go of because it's kind of, it maybe came naturally to a point, but oh my gosh, how many people haven't been utilizing cannabis and marijuana in various forms for years and not talking about it, who are fine, upstanding citizens. Mm-hmm. It's not all, everybody makes the joke of like Willie Nelson and blah, 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 blah. But it's
Cheech
like...
Cheech and Chong.
Yeah, exactly.
Both cool guys. I've met them both.
Sweet. And, you know, we have that... That has created concern, especially the, you know, let's just go with the Cheech and Chong thing. Mm-hmm. Of just the effects of the movies and the attitudes that sort of that has brought.
Who you will become as a person. Right. That is what you will turn into.
Right.
If you engage in this marijuana madness.
Exactly. And it's like, we don't look at Mountain Dew or McDonald's as easily and go, look at what that madness will get you. Mm-hmm. That will kill you. Might not be today, but... It will kill you. And it's that taking a step back and reviewing and thinking about re-entering the thought processes on that. Why is that socially acceptable and the other one isn't? Where did those things come from?
Yeah, asking questions. I think that's the big thing that I try to casually pass on to people is I am super inquisitive about myself and I try to not bullshit people and present myself as whatever. The more open and accepting I am of myself and verbally expressing that to people, they connect so much more. People don't want to feel like they have to be perfect or they have to know what's going on or they have to understand what you're saying or have a clue where to start. But if they need some kind of socially or in that interaction, they don't want to feel totally incompetent. So sometimes it take someone saying, hey, I had no idea what I was doing or what I was talking about, and hey, I did a little bit of research and I've looked at things and I've found not only people who have become successful or have continued to have success throughout their life while using cannabis, but I've got people who have started later in life. I was a semi goody-goody, so during those high school years I partied in the summers exclusively to the end date of summer. Nothing. Wouldn't touch a drop of anything, and I didn't smoke or even cigarettes. I was allergic. Thank God.
All right.
but starting later and still having that, it's not going to bring you down the path of doom and destruction, and you'll be on the streets selling your plasma or picking off stabs and eating them to get that weed high. Oh. That's not what it is.
Right. Well, and you You are kind of an out of the closet, out and proud user now, right?
I mean, it's only been since I'm like a year and a half, really.
Okay.
Kind of started that CBD company and had to tell my great grandma about it. And got the,
Grandma, what about the babies in Colorado? They're getting them high.
Grandma, where are you hearing this information?
The statement of everybody is saying that, you know, be careful with your kids' Halloween candy because people are putting gummies in there. And people are like, they cost way too much.
Yeah.
No, I'm not giving it away.
We're
going to
hurt the kids maliciously.
There's probably, some could argue, sorry, because my mind always goes to the, you know, think about the people who are giving the kids whole candy bars and Snickers bars. What are they, what gateway is that?
The high we're looking for is high fructose corn syrup.
Exactly. It's like, dude, but it's an interesting thing. Like when you're talking about just trying to sort of be in situations where you can speak to people and open that door. But it's kind of like a lot of other things. I'm betting, and tell me what your experience is with this, I'm betting you open the door to some of those conversations, and all of a sudden when you're a safe person, you're the person then people feel like they can all of a sudden talk to mm-hmm. because they're curious or...
My favorite one, I haven't smoked in years. But when I did, they tell me all these benefits or things that were good, and then... They transitioned into it, but then I got a real job, or then I got a family, or then I got a... And it's not always that they're looking to utilize it medicinally, but if I don't use something, and someone else uses it, and it helps them, and it in no way hurts me or anyone else that I can find, I don't have any say in what they're doing. I don't need to protect them if I have a thought about it. Especially if I have no experience with it. And so trying to be a voice with people of, especially now that I have these vaporizers, that's what's giving me the confidence. When you have a smell on you and people can get mm-hmm. you, they change before. And I've seen it. I've gone through people not being okay with how mm-hmm. I smell and mm-hmm. letting me know very clearly. But with that vaporizer, I walk up and say right now, if someone's sitting here, or people listening, they might, he must be getting ready to dose up afterwards. No, it's the appropriate use of something, and that's going to be personalized. And I think what people need is to not be shut down and told they just need to shut up and get with the program, or left to do it on their own. I think they need people who are guides. And the system in Minnesota is a pharmacy-led one, which I'm down with that. This pharmacy we have up in Hibbing, though, admittedly... said he learned most of his stuff from the patients from day one. Mm-hmm. So people in Minnesota looking for medical advice, inappropriate to look to your everyday person. Sure, I agree. People should disclaim they're not medical professionals and that they're not offering medical advice. But people have been guiding each other through situations for thousands and thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And through experience, we can learn maybe a few key things on how to possibly mentally approach this, or what's a good starting point, or what should I be looking for that's saying that it's working or not working, or small things that are maybe even rushed over when you go to the doctor, because it's a lot more simple. It's, hey, take this maybe once a day, twice a day, whatever, let me know, and then you take it. And then I've asked people, because with CBD it can sometimes interfere with the breakdown of certain medications. It utilizes an enzyme system that's super busy throughout the body and does a lot of the breakdown from the liver. So I ask people and kind of start the conversation about, how often do you get your medications checked? And I'm on zero medications, and I, besides that pill bottle, haven't really been on anything, so I don't relate to the process. Mm-hmm. And they're not getting their levels checked for any of their medication more often than not, which surprises me. It kind of hurts me. Because to me, you should be checking up on not only how the body's reacting to one, but the two, the three, the four, the five. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm naive and don't know how they interact with each other, and there's some level of safety that I'm not accounting for. But at the same time, there's not that conversation. And I think the paradigm is going to be shifting if there's an option like cannabis where you could be guided by your doctor, sure, by a pharmacist, sure, by a nurse practitioner, whoever. But there's going to be opportunities for everyday people, just like within each level of health, to be there as guides and I think that would be the most fun thing in the world to do, because I know how it felt to shift from I'm using something and I don't feel good because of it mentally, mm-hmm. on a deep level, but on a day-to-day check engines, how am I doing? I'm doing great. Like, this isn't working, to I'm going to use this in the way that makes me feel the best. That is such a big jump. Right. And we just know, you can't ask that question if you have hesitancy within your morality or
right. Well, ethic, you've got this legal, discord whatever. In your being with the values that you have and this thing that you're doing that is helping you be feel like a better person, helping you function in the world, but you're feeling like a criminal. That's a, you know, the dissonance of that in your body feels really crappy, and you don't have help, and you can't, there is nobody to go to. Everything is risky, right? So you have to figure out your own usage.
Quality of product, very inconsistent.
Right, yeah.
And I even hear people talking, being in this industry, I get to hear them open up about their overall cannabis thoughts, people who use CBD kind of exclusively. I couldn't even imagine risking it on the black market. You never know what you could get. It could have fentanyl in it. It could have whatever, and all sorts of stuff. And in my head, I'm thinking, well, if that's what you depended on to move forward with your day, you'd probably work pretty hard to find a consistent situation to make that happen for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that people that have more money have a lot safer in non-legal or recreational states, have a lot safer time getting that kind of stuff. And I grew up definitely with not a lot of money, and I have seen the racial discrepancies where people I've been with have gotten in trouble and I have not. And even though I've got a little bit of Native American in me, 25%, I've got no physical attributes. So being someone who's not entirely Caucasian or white and having to live in these different sides where I've got family members of varying looks, and I connect with multiple cultures, see there be that discrepancy. And I mean, up here we're pretty culturally non-diverse.
Right.
It's more so, I guess, in that sense, socioeconomic.
Well,
it's
right.
Definitely, if your car sucks and you have a smell in it, it's getting searched. Mm-hmm. If your car is super nice and maybe they smell something, if you weren't doing something crazy, you're probably getting let go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the reality of things up here. And it's not always race, but I do think that Minnesota being we'll take $100 from you every time we catch you with something, but we're not putting you in jail, is kind of a way of saying we're running a racket here. We know it's helping people because we don't make it illegal, or we at least know they want to do it and it's in their own minds helping them. Mm-hmm. But we will take $100 from you. And if we catch you a couple times, or if we choose to arrest you or prosecute you a couple times, then we can increase. And that also leads to increased ability to search people.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the easiest gateway into being searched. And I'm not anti-police in any way. I'm pro-American rights and the Constitution and knowing your rights as a citizen, and there being an overall unified approach to being an American to facilitate everyone else's freedoms and pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to involve their health.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
On a base level, non-commoditized, non-contracted. People have the right to look for health, and that's actually how it became legal, because that was recognized in California when the gentleman with the cataracts approached them and they were already doing the compassionate care program, which still goes on today. There are people receiving tins of pre-rolled cannabis cigarettes from the government today. There are 4 people left on the program.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and your statement of the socio, I mean, that's another thing that is such a challenge, is if you've got somebody, say, living in an apartment building, smoking marijuana, everybody knows about it. You got somebody in their house where nobody else is going to smell it.
And they're eating cookies and having the PTA kids over. And
they nobody has to know, right? I mean, that it's just like, it's so many things. It's that we can see it in a particular culture because their lives sometimes are a little more transparent, where, like you say, the race and socioeconomic status, if you're at the upper end of that, there's so much that you can just get by with, not even by trying.
You avoid detection.
Right.
You're under the radar.
Right. So it's just, I mean, I think that's another thing we need to think about, too. It's the whole, it doesn't mean it's not happening. It just means it's happening differently. So I want to go back to your journey on, I want to get to where you are kind of now and what you're doing and what your focus is. So you were working with this company. Are you still doing that?
I've actually started a business with a friend of 20 years, and he's also part of that company. So he kind of branched out and continued in that whole cannabis sphere and joined me on the journey that I have. So after I ended up separating from my former fiance and had some stuff crashing down, kind of all of the pieces that I missed on the back end there caught up to me, we'll say, and there was just not a relationship there. And that's being worked on currently, just as we're trying to take care of our children together.
Nice.
But after that happened, I collapsed after volunteering with this veteran program. And I was a participant the first round and the second and third and fourth. I was the trainer, and I was kind of found my little medic slot where I can help people, and even people 20, 30 years older than me, I'm helping connect. And with my attitude, I felt a purpose. When that split up, crashed. I left, isolated, hardcore. I found that every single thing that she was making up for was now exposed to me. Like a glacier ripped all this stuff off and exposed who I really was. Like, oh, okay, I'm gone. Here's what you've got to work on. So that's been the last couple of years. And a big part of that was the people who I'd worked with, the nonprofit, got me to go to the VA. And I took 2 years to fill out the paperwork, to do the process of writing down different events that happen, how it affects me currently, going to different appointments, having people basically, in my mind, validate or judge me. Basically say if what I'm saying is the truth. They're not there to, that's what they're there for, to see if I'm telling the truth, and then someone can apply what degree of compensation I'd get. So it was a tough time because I had to question everything. I wanted so badly to just say, nope, you're making everything up. You can do it. Get over it. Let's go. Just I hadn't admitted anything was going on. Mm-hmm. And that was a big step. And then detailing some of the feelings and events drug out a lot of deep things that I had not dealt with that were kind of why I was in the shape I was in when that relationship ended. It wasn't like, okay, we're done. I can move on and kind of build myself. And no, I was lower than probably I had been the whole time before.
Oh, wow.
And this was 2 years ago. I was ready to off myself. I was just nothing to live for. I was a useless human being. And no matter what I had done, it was all selfish. And I let my family and my fiance just fall to the wayside. And what a selfish human being I was. Or I wasn't worth anything. And slowly I transitioned through those feelings and the help of friends and redoing that process of finding digital mentors, finding books, reconnecting to concepts. It was about a year where I was kind of numb, crazy, nothing was working. So that was about 3 years ago, because I've almost been doing the business for 2 years.
Okay.
And I got a little chunk of back change from, I did end up getting a disability rating through the VA, and that includes compensation. And so 2 years and decent back pay. And I thought, I don't want to waste this money. And I'd written down on a board, figure out what you want to do in life. And I looked at it a bunch of times. And this word modern kept popping up into my head for about a year straight. No idea why. Oh, cool. Your name's Motor and it's in the word. Oh, good for you. I had no thoughts of anything. It's just that would pop up. And modern, modern, modern. Wow, that's a cool word. How does it look? What's the fonts? What's going on? I'm not an artsy type guy, I had thought. And I wanted to try some CBD. I had used cannabis, but I'd heard that CBD was more effective in managing anxiety and actually relieving any anxiety that THC might help aggravate. So there was some truth in people saying that high THC can possibly aggravate anxiety. So using CBD, which is more natural to have both of them in the plant versus being bred out for high THC, which is what happened. The drug varieties were bred to be extremely short, high producing, lots of flowers, dense, and as much THC, the psychoactive compound, as mm-hmm. possible. And so you had this breeding out of CBD. And so this, the third option, the hybrid of having some CBD, some THC, like hemp has extremely low THC and relatively low CBD as well. There are varieties of marijuana that have around 1% THC or maybe 0.5, just above that 0.3% legality mark, but have 10, 12, let's say the other one's 2%, the hemp, about 2%, 4% CBD is pretty high. 12%, 19%, way higher, and having a more diverse amount of terpenes. So having a greater variety of things. And now I got to pop back to exactly why I was talking about that. How I got into it was trying to get some of those anxiety relieving aspects of it. I worked at the Whole Foods Co-op and got a small training on it and heard anti-anxiety. Like I said, I wanted to test it out, see if it would complement what I had going on. I wanted to vaporize it because I knew it would work faster, and I was just comfortable with that method, having control. I could see, does it work or not? That was kind of my, I had taken pills of it from the co-op and thought I felt something. I wanted to do the real test run. Couldn't find anything. Didn't go to any smoke shops. I was very hesitant, even though I'm part of that kind of culture, I guess you could say it in a way. I didn't trust them giving me a health product. I didn't trust them supplying me with something. They had that synthetic marijuana and bath salts and all of these nasty crap that they sold there. So I immediately didn't want to associate something I was getting there with that, because they weren't vetting their vendors very well, maybe. My friend, who was a designer and worked in Colorado in the cannabis industry, worked with this veteran-owned company and said I should check them out. And so I did, and ended up seeing on their website that they had an opportunity for white labeling. And I felt this sense of, I need to get other people to the point where I am mentally, specifically other veterans. Because I started kind of outing myself to the veteran group. It's easy when you're in relatively good shape and can, yeah, what are you going to say about it, though? Or how is it negatively affecting me in physical shape? And the military is a big thing. So if you can say, hey, yeah, minimum, alcohol may make you fat. Look at what I've got going on, and here's what I'm doing. But I wanted to spread this mindset of using it as medicine. And
describe the term white labeling.
So it's the veteran-owned company in Colorado gets hemp from Kentucky and Colorado, grinds it up, extracts out the CBD from it, formulates different products, and then they would, at first they were pre-bottled, and I would get them, and I would put my own label on it so that I owned the approach to everything. I could control the message, I could control the price, I could control the marketing, whoever I went after. It was the start of a business. It was my foot in the door to the cannabis industry for when Duluth opened up, was my main thought. As soon as cannabis becomes legal, recreationally or a little bit more open medically, I want to be there in Duluth to have a discussion with people, and I need to start doing something actually to have that. I've got all these thoughts, and I've gone to these things and experienced all these different avenues and aspects of using cannabis, and I feel too scared to talk about it. Well, I'm starting a business. And I think people should have access to a product that they trust. And we went to Colorado, my two business partners and I, to check it out before we invested in anything. And they met all the requirements I had researched on the way. I thought I knew what was going on with cannabis and CBD. I had no idea. I spent 15 straight hours on my phone researching, reading Section 7606 of the 2014 Agricultural Act, the Farm Bill, that initially started that hemp pilot program. I had read and changed my mind on the legality of it 10 times on the way out there.
Oh, wow.
And this was 2018, so just last year in May. And even then, 4 years after it had been something, there was so much confusion that I didn't even know if I could purchase it, buy it, if any of it was legitimate. And then kind of nailed all that down, and that started solidified. I am almost positive that things are going to open up where cannabis is available as a medicine and as a recreationally used plant. And with that being said, I can either complain about how it is here now. I wanted to move for years to provide myself with the environment that supports my growth. And feeling like a criminal, did not. Now that I have that medical aspect and I can see things moving in a certain direction, I really want to be a part of it, because I think there's opportunity for people outside of Duluth in the Minnesota area to come in and make it into something. Or we can take, which Minnesota kind of did, not from a people's position, I don't think, when they took control of the medical program, but how we want things to be in Duluth, that's up to us. And if we want it to be a fair conversation, we as in people who are going to be pro-cannabis, people around here need to hear stuff before it gets legalized, and then they think that it's bad and we need to control it, and then the people controlling it make all the money. And it's not about the money, but that control will also lead to a product that is X. I won't have a say in it. Mm-hmm. If I can't grow or own a business or supply or whatever may be controlled outside of your everyday person, and we take safety and make it our priority, that's really control, and that's going to be kind of robbing this new culture that could be popping up where people are forced to look at becoming their own self-caretakers.
Right.
Or you can have a more intimate relationship. If juicing cannabis leaves helps you a lot and you grow the plant, green therapy, you've got like multimodality things. Also, at the same time, your cannabis grows well with other different plants, so you can grow other plants, you can grow food, you can grow all sorts of stuff. And then tying into that, maybe some exercise, and then having those foods be healthy. You can look at cannabis as being a jump board for all healthy habits. And when I say cannabis, if you immediately think about getting high, then you don't understand the entirety of cannabis, because getting high is a certain application. I call that, it's either a medicinal aspect where it could, because it's dissociative, THC is, so it's useful in letting people step back from problems instead of, oh, woe is me, I am this problem. There's the pain relief that can come from a high level of the psychoactivity. There could be the ability to move past memories because of that slight forgetfulness. So for that moment, the possibly veteran is able to move past that loop of, I need to look for threat, I need to look for threat, because they're forgetting about that for a second. And as long as you're approaching it with, we're looking for the best outcome here, and you kind of monitor that, I think that's a healthy way to move forward with cannabis. And I don't think fighting and closing off and having these major arguments, we can all agree that results in reality, when they're supported by the evidence that's going to be coming, mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to argue with. And if you fight it, you won't be a part of it. And I invite everyone who is concerned about it to be a part of it and figure it out.
So what can people do? Like, and I ask that question in two different ways. One is to educate themselves in a way that they feel that they're getting good information. And then also, what can they do to sort of lend their voice, whether, you know, not even saying they're a user or not, but just to say, to open the conversation, to get people talking about it and have it be a positive outcome where they can be in support.
Yeah, we'll do the first one.
How they can educate themselves.
How they can educate themselves. Yep. So that's the biggest thing, is self-education in this aspect, but there's a major barrier to it. And that's part of why I started the company I did, was to not only provide a product that was trusted, but to educate myself and learn how to bring that to other people, because it is a mess. If there was something like this outside of cannabis, no one would stand for it because of how much misinformation, conflicting information, lack of information there is. It's crazy. Oh, we don't want to study that. We study heroin. We study meth. We study cocaine. We study everything to the point where we understand what's going on a deep cellular level. And we're claiming that we don't know. And we're not moving forward. So with the education piece, my goal is to continue to develop an education course. I've given a few small workshop talks. We're also expanding our product line now to include very soon a local Minnesota product from NJ Farms down in Minneapolis. So we will be adding in a local aspect, hopefully getting more into different retailers around here who are supportive of the local aspect, and continue to educate through offering education to those specific places, such as we're looking to get into the Whole Foods Co-op is my first big target, because they're a big supporter of local and they have a platform to be able to share information.
Mm-hmm.
So developing my thing. So once I'm ready, everyone can come to me and at least check out what I've got to say. Otherwise, really great resources. One of them, and it's cannabis wide, but this is a very pro cannabis CBD. If you're looking for CBD information in general, and there's a lot of cannabis research on there too, but it's projectcbd.org. And that's an independent organization that's trying to promote the acceptance, research, use, understanding of CBD and cannabis. And then my favorite one is healer.com, and that's Dr. Dustin Sulak. And he is a DO, a doctor of osteopathic medicine from the New England area. And at his, I think it's Synergy, I can't remember the name of his company, but it has to do with Synergy. And he runs a website called healer.com. And not only do they provide a bunch of free information, but if you were looking to take a course that's already available, both on cannabis in general, and now they have a CBD specific one, you can pay, I think it's $150-$200 to get that information from him. But he's worked with over 18,000 patients and does a very good job at covering, just like a doctor would want to, side effects, risks, interactions, dosing protocols. And there's a lot of people saying, no, we don't know how to do it. There's no research out there. People like this guy, Dustin Sulak at healer.com, are putting together their clinical notes. They're gathering the practitioners. And actually, when cannabis became illegal through taxation in the 1930s, the last group that was fighting for it to not have this kind of taxation illegality conundrum was the American Medical Association, because they had it on their list of things to use up until years after the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act, which through taxation doubled the price at every interchange point.
Oh, wow.
So it, just like machine guns were kind of banned in that way, just through taxation, if you can't afford it, you can't get it, and it puts it into a black market. That's where the origination, up until 1978 with the Controlled Substance Act, it was not illegal. It was illegal through taxation. So you had to purchase a marijuana stamp to have it in your possession. You didn't have the stamp, you were breaking the law. And that law carried its own penalties. And obviously, with having a different system of checks and balances within our legal system, you could see some shady activity happening out of the vagueness of it's illegal without a stamp. That's just a pushed heavily that Chicanos and African Americans, I mean, it's both terms and all the terms you could think of that are racially charged. That's where it was aimed at. Those people are utilizing this marijuana when the medicines said cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana is not even the primary Spanish term for cannabis. It's cañamo. And marijuana comes probably from a Pancho Villa song, La Cucaracha.
Oh, really?
Talking about them smoking their marijuana. Uh-huh. And so that ties directly into, even if it wasn't from that song, cannabis is in no way Spanish in origin. The plant itself. Yeah, it might grow there better, and there might have been a connection throughout United States history, but in the history of the plant, this is not a Mexican or Spanish plant. So off the bat, utilizing, and my brother laughs, because whenever I say marijuana, he almost, it's like he's seen something crazy. He's like, dude, you never say marijuana. You're always saying cannabis. And I do that in both talking about industrial hemp and marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
Cannabis, all the same thing, and just varying levels of different compounds, varying uses, and on a spectrum of things to use, not one or the other.
So what do people do? Like, how do they help this conversation move forward?
I'd say being kind of curious and open when you're dealing with people. As let's say you are someone who uses cannabis, when you're dealing with people, it's really easy to either not talk or be defensive, but to take kind of a curious stance onto what their feelings might be. Because a lot of times, if you can show them or they can show themselves that it's kind of irrational what they're thinking, or try and get real life examples out of maybe what they're thinking, a lot of times they won't be able to get there. And at least they might be more open to hearing what you have to say. So just approaching with curiosity. And then if you are someone who does not use cannabis, or especially if you're against it, I recommend so highly that you research and look at what's going on from both sides. And if you do use it, do the same thing. Type in, what are the negative effects, or what are the health risks? And if you can muster up the strength to read some peer-reviewed articles, that's what I would do. Because any news story that's linked to a peer-reviewed article, if you look in the forward part that summarizes it, it tells you almost always that nothing is a conclusion. This does not say that, and it's explicit. There was one link to schizophrenia within the last year, and you can, a big sensationalized article headline, and then you go to the article link, and you go to the actual study, and it's this meta-analysis of people who are showing up to get diagnosed with a first-time psychotic break. And then even at the end of that, it says that cannabis use cannot be linked to schizophrenia has not been shown. We cannot conclude. There is no, we've got it. We finally got him. That doesn't exist. So looking at that stuff for yourself, don't settle for this. Because how can you defend your position of not agreeing with cannabis if the sites you use or the references you use can be broken down to a primary source that says something completely opposite of what you're saying? So I'm all for having good information put out there. There are people who shouldn't be using high THC. There's people who shouldn't be using a lot of things. Coffee. People should be exercising more. People should be doing more of this, less or that. But until we make it something that's kind of as normalized as those things, we won't be able to approach it like adults and actually figure out what's going to work for not only the individual, but our society as a whole.
Right. Well, I just saw an article this morning that I haven't read yet, but basically it was saying, you know, the most harmful drug we have is alcohol. And we've totally normalize that as it's totally fine. You know, yeah, people get out of control with it, but it's like, okay, well, that's interesting. So if we, again, back to that, we all do it. We all make those kind of assumptions or weird associations that maybe don't make a whole lot of sense because they're culturally our thing, but it is kind of being able to go, well, wait a minute, what about this? And are we being rational, especially when we are trying to, when we have something like this that has helped so many people for so many things? You know, I know a lot of people who the alcohol is numbing, but there's really no grand benefit.
There's a whole bunch of Civil War veterans who are disagreeing with you, whose legs would have been way more painful to get cut off.
I can totally get
cocaine too, but that's not used anymore.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm not allowed to have alcohol before I go into surgery now. So what about when we're talking either in Duluth specifically or maybe in general? If people want to be part of the conversation, they want to just support this being normalized, but in that more legalistic way. Mm-hmm. What do we do?
Yeah, I'm honestly kind of an in the trenches type person, so I can't say here's what I've been involved with that has actively helped me or people I know benefit from having a conversation like that. But I do know of a couple organizations. Sensible Minnesota is a group that is looking to develop policies surrounding that. There's the Students for Sensible Drug Policy. So if you're a college age person or involved with students, or if that's kind of your jam, then that'd be a place to get into. I think there's a normal group that meets down in Minneapolis, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. So that's kind of one of the older ones. But that's, I think, the thing with our area and maybe Minnesota in general is that we're in this weird twilight zone, this gray area of, yeah, it's all right. But at the same time, we all have this feeling of it's terrible and bad for you. So I'd say the best way you can help is inside your own zone and really yourself, asking yourself, what are my beliefs about cannabis or marijuana or hemp or CBD or THC or whatever part you're struggling with or questioning? Question it. Because if you can say that I know enough to speak on this, you're fooling yourself. I can't speak on it. There's not enough research out there for people who, if you speak on it based off of fact or what can be replicated or however you approach what you talk about, and when it really comes down to it, neither side can say anything conclusive. And so I found that getting involved in organizations that try to move one way or the other on conclusive evidence is not always the easiest thing to do. So I mm-hmm. personally got involved in the cannabis industry as a route to doing that. I talked to people in suits. I talked to people from church groups. I talked to all sorts of people with the springboard of CBD, which is legal. And then they hear about how I'm benefiting from medical cannabis. So I am putting myself in a position. And I think everyone can do that in as little risky way as they want to mm-hmm. and make it an actual part of what they're doing, whether it's reaching out to somebody who they know is using cannabis and maybe could use some help and sending them my way or to healer.com or some other form of education, or someone hears this and instead of thinking I need to maintain this barrier with a family member or my physician or whomever, hearing this and saying, well, it's time to change that. And it doesn't have to be a one or the other. And I'm just going to integrate this into my life. I think not making a backdoor conversation is the best way people can get involved. And even if you don't agree, open up. Because what if you heard something indirect that helped you that had nothing to do with cannabis, or you made a relationship with someone, or you maybe had a positive impact on someone's life that you wouldn't be able to have if you are judging them for something that you think is negatively impacting them, when that's, one, their thing to figure out, and two, if you really want to help support them, then come with curiosity and empathy maybe.
Well, and I think the whole concept of CBD becoming a thing has opened up a lot of doors for conversation for people, because it's an easier way to have the conversation, and it gets it started. You know, I think people have started to open up a little bit more.
I've watched it happen. It's been that, funny.
I've
talked to the same people a year apart.
Oh, wow.
And their beliefs on it are completely flipped. That happened with my first retailer. We wholesaled to this one company, and they're kind of family friends who own a business. They're in their 50s, and at first they were, you got the stuff with THC in it? Like, I don't want any of that. I don't know what kind of message we'd be sending to our kind of morality, like bashing. 4 months later, when we solidified this deal and actually had it moving forward, they were saying, you have the stuff with the THC in it, right? We want the good stuff, because they heard that entourage effect, having that minute amount under 0.3%, which is sub-psychoactive. I love that. I go, it's not THC. What if THC made it work better? Well, or what if it didn't cause any psychoactive effects? Oh. It's just this space in their mind they've never occupied with a thought, because it doesn't exist in propaganda world.
Right. It's white or black, right?
It's CBD.
Yeah.
Pure CBD. Or that pot stuff, you Californian. Get out of here.
So you did the CBD thing for yourself. Did you find that CBD helped and medical marijuana is just so much better for you?
I'd say the mindset change from getting my medical access and status, as well as having access to CBD all the time. So if I ever lost access in any way, for whatever number of reason, to my legal supply or whatever, I had something all the time that I knew I was doing to help support the system that can help keep some of that stuff in check, the mood stabilization, the being able to think through hypervigilance. Yeah. I say this all the time, mostly I wouldn't be able to have this conversation with you if I wasn't taking this product or using this plant. And that connects with a lot of people, but they don't know if they haven't sat and had an hour-long conversation with me that I went from the captain of the football team, basketball team, leading the knowledgeable, trying to blast off into Neverland and have the best life ever, to I want to kill myself and I hate my life. And it was after something that a lot of people hold and a lot of respect, and it boosts them to the next level. And like, my military service blasted me off, so I've got, at the same time, I should be feeling good about what I did, and I in no way can connect positivity to that. And at the same time, had a deep sense of honor and purpose.
Mind. So for you, CBD is a good backup, but it's not the thing.
It's in concert with. I definitely take it at the same time.
Okay.
And it is something that I can utilize when I travel to other states.
Got it.
And it is something that it helps me maintain tolerance, appropriate tolerance levels, so that I'm not only relying on THC, high medication. I have a vaporizer as well as an oral suspension, and they're both primarily THC. But again, the medical program, just like that wholesaler had found out, they're understanding that adding in some of the, there's not only two, there's over 50 cannabinoids found in, phytocannabinoids found in cannabis. And just like we said, microRNA and all of these other parts of DNA were junk DNA. It's basically just saying, we're too ignorant to understand it. That doesn't matter.
Right.
That's the point we're at with cannabis, where we are looking at two compounds out of 50 plus.
There's a bunch more.
I've seen 111. I've seen a couple different numbers.
Right.
Okay. But we're looking at two. And we're also doing the same thing when it comes to our endocannabinoid system. So our own balance system that down-regulates and up-regulates every process in our body and has an interplay in some way in the disease process for every single disease. And that's a 2015 meta-analysis that looked at different things in the endocannabinoid system, all found through researching synthetic stuff. So separate from the plant, and I love going there because people don't really seem to fight. No, forget the plant. Let's talk about the system. And then I say, after I describe the system, that CBD has been shown to possibly help support that system. It kind of connects the dots to a, well, it's kind of like a supporting supplement rather than a drug. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit easier to make that leap.
Okay, that makes sense. So talk a little bit more about, as we kind of wrap up, you're talking about being your own medic.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit more about that, kind of what that means to you and maybe how to get people in that mindset. And you talked about that somewhat too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So the other thing besides awareness that really helped me out was responsibility. And my digital mentor, Jocko, had another piece. I do have other ones. He puts it very simply. Extreme Ownership was the name of his first book. And it was a concept of, it's old, it's not his, it's every thinker in the past has thought of it, taking responsibility for yourself. So being your own medic means you have to, one, diagnose what's going on. And I'm not talking like a WebMD. I'm talking about figuring out a way to describe the state or sensations or feelings. So getting familiar with what's going on versus something's going on to me and I don't know. That is not a very empowering place to come from, and that's not how a medic would approach it. So if you remove yourself from a helpless being to a I am now in control and responsible for figuring out when what's good, when's good, what's not good, and then also taking the responsibility for getting those steps moving forward. And that doesn't mean stepping your way into the car and driving to the doctor and asking, how can you lower my blood pressure and what are the side effects? That's doing what you know. And what the simple things. What's really cool is that the endocannabinoid system, and that's really where I get the modern medicine from, and my Instagram name is The Modern Medic. But that endocannabinoid system is controlled primarily, the health of it, or the tone is the word used in the scientific realm. One, diet, and two, exercise. So two things that you can easily start to do. And so the third one being adding in some form of cannabis if you choose. And that is used as, like I've said earlier, a springboard or a facilitator, something that helps move you forward in the mindset, not only in the maybe whatever physical benefits you might get from it or mental benefits, but also the biggest thing I feel that people should learn to kind of crave in this journey of staying healthy over a lot of different cultures have put a huge, heavy emphasis on health. The Anishinaabe, which is the Ojibwe that's what band and tribe I'm from, they have the Grand Medicine Society, and it all, the whole religion is based around keeping your body healthy. So where we think of it as kind of a side thing to productivity, if we look at it more as our primary role is to make sure that we are healthy and to take responsibility for that. So it's something that could be maybe broken down a little bit more, but I think that's really all I'm trying to do. When I break it down, I love that I got it from a book, too. It's cool when you don't have to think of things and it's laid out there for you. It's an older book called Coaching for Excellence.
Okay.
Sir John Whitmore, father of coaching in some way, the inner philosophy coaching.
Okay.
Through sports. But you don't have to tell people what to do. You just have to get them to raise their level of awareness and then raise their responsibility. So once they know what's going on, and they say, I need to do something. A medic does not fix you. A medic gets you ready for the next set of care or maintains the troops. So to maintain the fighting force is kind of a thing for medics. So when I say be your own medic, I don't mean you have to go to the level of maybe I did at one point where I'm extreme vegan, only eating this, no chemicals, got all these different things in place, and I'd never do anything, and that's all I'm obsessed about is I need to be healthy, and that is not healthy, and that's not what I mean. It's having a level of responsibility for whatever choice I make forward, even if that's with a provider or this care practitioner. I've made that choice, and I am responsible for the outcome and the in-between. Not saying that you can control everything, but moving forward, yep, okay. This is my responsibility. You'll reduce the amount of time you spend in that hopelessness land because, yeah, I don't know what to do. I would love to hit a switch and then the empty, hollow, foggy, crumpling rage where I want to snap stuff in half would go away, maybe. Mm-hmm. But that's not helpful, useful, or going to move me in any kind of healthy direction. Mm-hmm. So I essentially became my own medic through researching and experiencing and also kind of witnessing the back end of the medical system and how what they were trying to do. And at the core of it, that's what they're trying to do. There's just some barriers in how they can get you to move to the point of taking responsibility and gaining awareness. Because if I think if you asked any general practitioner who their end goal is to make you more in control of your health than you are right now.
Right.
It's not to take care of you. They're there as that guide when we culturally don't see them like that anymore. We see them as these fixers, and there is no room for a general practitioner. We've got life coaches, health coaches, this coach, that coach. I think that there's room for everybody in there, but if the patients demand a certain type of relationship, they're going to create that health environment through finding different practitioners and supporting people that
person wants the help and says, okay, I'm ready to take responsibility, but I need a little more help to figure how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily there.
And then you have that awareness. I need more help in what's going on. I will go get more help. And the difference between sitting in between in helplessness, I can't control what that provider just did, didn't do, will do at all.
So how do I get more people? How do I find people I need to support?
From our different conversations, that's kind of the mm-hmm. whole mindset of what this podcast and your journey is,
right?
Just creating that mindset of I am responsible for me because no one else is going to be, and why would I want them to be? Who's going to know more about what's impacting me positively or negatively than me?
Right.
And so that's how I can stand in my cannabis confidence. And I still have days where I question things or try to figure out if I'm taking the right approach or if someday there's going to be some evidence that pops out and proves me wrong. But I think staying open to looking for what's going on is going to keep me as close to the truth about it or what's repeatable as possible.
It's a fascinating thing. I was just thinking about when you were talking about, you know, there's all this studies, yet people aren't quite getting on board with medical marijuana or all that is available there. And then I can't help but my mind goes to like Monsanto and how many studies there are that say genetically modified food, not good for us. People are sick, but we don't know why. But that's okay. We're going to hide the labeling. We're not going to make it easy for you to know that it is. We're not going to disclose. And they get away with that.
And I think cannabis is also going to help agriculture because people using cannabis do not want chemicals used. They do not want anything being in the ground. They do not want any genes being spliced in. They don't want it Roundup ready. They don't want it ready for any kind of modifications, which include patents and money for companies. And that is translating to, well, you put that on our food. If it's bad when we burn it or concentrate it, maybe it's not good when we eat it. Or if the cannabis industry is demanding we don't use these pesticides because they're bad, oh, they use them too. Hey, we shouldn't be doing that. So providing a platform not only for a health reform possibly, but also for, well, it's a health reform, the agricultural approach based off of what we put in our body is really affecting us, and what we put into our body is really affecting us. And do we need to change it? It's not a should. It's a do we need, because there's this necessity push always about feeding the bajillions and needing to create this. But I think, again, raise your awareness, raise your responsibility. Maybe that is the right path. I'm not here to tell you. Figure it out yourself. And then we can talk about it, like adults.
Right. Yeah, totally true. Exactly. Yeah. So two last questions. You'd mentioned a few resources. Do you have any other just like resources that kind of helped you figure yourself out? I'm sure there are tons, but couple things that bubble up to your mind of people to look out for, books to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like Jordan B. Peterson, 12 Rules for Life. I like Hermann Hesse, Siddhartha.
Oh.
That was a really good one. That was a reflective one. I really like looking at people who keep it simple and tell it straight. Jocko Willink is someone who looks at different books and extracts from it different things and shares it, which I thought was maybe illegal up until he did it.
No.
It's not. He's not copyright infringing. But with this question, I'd say find something that you can connect with. So if this person says, oh, I really like this person, go check them out. If you see in the YouTube link or the ad or some passing by, oh, there's that thing, I should look into that. And that ties into that whole being your own. I can say everything that's helped me, but it's pretty specific to what I've needed to learn. Right. So maybe identifying areas in your life that you want to grow in, or maybe you should without wanting to, that you've become aware of, and then look for people maybe who specialize in that or that have a message that and story that you can connect with, because we're all very similar. And just because I was in the military doesn't mean someone listening to this won't connect, and just because I was doesn't mean someone who wasn't will connect. Mm-hmm. And so Looking for different people in this age, I'd say the biggest thing would be, if you don't know where to look, start with YouTube, because then you can find people and then you can dive deeper into it. So maybe instead of being shown the bestsellers list or the person to watch, you can type in YouTube's the number two search engine, because you can type in a bunch of random stuff and you can get to it. So worst case scenario, you can cut out any crap that Google's going to send you and type in, how do I better use cannabis, or how do I stop blowing up at my boss, or whatever you want to look into. And then a lot of people are putting out little snippets. So to put it more into the, I'm 28, so I try to stay within the realm of what's going on and kind of changing, as well as looking at things as far back as books in the 1800s, different Benjamin Franklin writings.
Fun.
Yeah, just always looking, staying aware of what you might need to do some looking into.
I love that you said the things that you feel like you need to change or improve on, and then the things that you might not really want to...
You don't want to.
You don't really want to change or whatever.
Because awareness doesn't mean acceptance right away. Right. It doesn't mean I love what I see in any way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's an improper awareness. It could be blown up out of proportion. So That's part of figuring it out. And a lot of times, hearing someone else's similar event, story, thought, or something totally different can spark that, or reading it. So Looking outside of yourself. If you're religious, look at your religious texts, talk to different support groups, whatever you're into. I'd say don't segment your life, tie it all together towards something, and it makes it a lot easier to keep up on things. If my health isn't where it is, I'm not a good father, which is important to me. If I'm not managing my sleep or my food, well, then I can't maintain physical energy, and then I'm going to do poorly at my job. And so having those reasons of tying all your life together will open up, I want to learn about this. And then it's, I'm terrible at this, and I need to get better at it. You have a motivation of adding to what you're already trying to do versus segmenting into little what's wrong with me. Because we all have way too much stuff wrong. In my opinion.
So if people want to find you to maybe work with you, tell them how they might be able to work with you. And then do you have products available for people? And if so, how do they reach that?
We don't have any services available yet as a company. And I might be doing that on more of a personal run too. So look forward for that. If you want to connect with me on social media, Facebook, it would be John Motor. Instagram, Modern Medic John. If you want to email me, you can email me at john@modcbd.com, which is also the website, modcbd.com. If you are interested in checking out some of the veteran-distributed CBD goods that we have for sale, as well as you can give me a call. I hand out my number all the time, and I do a lot of phone conversations. If you're not annoyed by my voice already and you want to hear more of it, it's at 715-919-3920. And so that's what I'm looking more towards doing, is creating courses, workshops in the future, potentially an online permanent thing that I don't have to be there to give, so that people are able to learn from it and critique it faster, so I can get better too.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for having me on, Judy.
It's a great conversation, and I just think it's such an important topic, and I think you bring a lot of it together with the aspect of being a veteran and PTSD, which is such a big challenge for so many people dealing, trying to manage that and figure out how do they take care of themselves and do the next best thing.
Yeah, 90% of the people in the medical program with the PTSD qualifying condition mm-hmm. are non-military, non-combat.
Wow, that's interesting.
So everyone out there who, maybe you use cannabis and you're in Minnesota and you think, well, I've got nothing wrong with me. But you could break down your life and maybe see, I do have something that might tie into that trauma piece, or I did have a head injury, or I did have this going on. So one, don't discount yourself and potentially get into the program. I'd say a quick shout out to TimeWise Medical in Minneapolis, Dr. Adam Lockett's former doctor of the year, pain management specialist and cannabis user who struggled with that side of legality and being able to utilize cannabis for whatever he's using it for and be an amazing physician at the same time. So I think he's a good resource for qualifying patients to the medical program.
Well, and there you go, right there, his own experience. He's not just coming at from a advantageous, look at this new opportunity. It's struggling with his own and then helping other people.
Yeah, and if you're out there buying CBD right now, the first thing you should look for is to make sure that they're telling you everything you need to know about it. They're transparent, how much is in it, where it comes from, lab tested. Is it full spectrum? Does it have the THC in it? Is it isolate? What does it have in it? As well as what kind of extraction method you're looking for. Alcohol, leaning into the CO2 varieties more so is kind of the standard, including the Minnesota Medical one. So CO2 supercritical, or the new variety that we are looking into with NJ Farms is cold CO2 processing, which actually leaves it in an acidic form and uses way less heat. So I'm excited to see what that does.
Oh.
As well as the fourth thing is, what does the company do? So like Judy said, there are people in here just looking for the green rush, so to speak, and that can lead to maybe not the product you're looking for, or just supporting maybe something less than what you would like to support. So whether it's modern medicine or it's a different company, look into the people who are benefiting from it and see how they're putting that back into the community. Because cannabis, throughout the states I've visited, is very community-based. And I think it being illegal in Minnesota for so long has kept that community underground. And if you're just joining that community, trust is a huge aspect of this. So make sure that you're taking your step forward to see who you're dealing with when it comes to not only buying a health product, but also getting into an industry that isn't that well regulated. And that could be another way to make sure that you're dealing with a good company.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's good advice. Thank you. Thanks for being here. This is great.
Yeah. Appreciate it a lot.
Check the show notes for all of the contact information to connect up with John. His last name is spelled M-O-D-E-R, John Moder. And also the resources and people that he talked about. I tried to get them all in the notes. I think I caught everything. Thank you so much for listening. And please do consider sharing this episode with anybody who might find it beneficial or helpful, or just might be curious about the topic. First and foremost, I do this podcast to help people find the people and information to serve their life and well-being better. That's what it's all about. So thank you for being a part of my mission. I really do appreciate it. Check out the website, like I said, for show notes, for other podcast topics, wellnessrenpodcast.com. It is a place where you can sign up for weekly emails. We send out an email whenever we put out a new episode, so you can be aware of that right away when it happens. That website is also where you can support the podcast financially. The big red button that says become a patron, it's going to take you to the Patreon site, but that is where you can do that. We would be very grateful. Thank you so much to our Patreon supporters. You mean the world to us and have a very special place in our hearts. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Of course, you can find Wellness Renaissance on Facebook and keep up with what's going on there as well. And of course, we would love to hear your feedback on Facebook, under the show notes, wherever. We love to know, what did you think about the episode? What was the big takeaway? Did you learn anything new? Have you had any new thought processes about this whole medical marijuana or PTSD or just the experience that John had? That's all kind of fascinating. I say from the perspective of outside looking in, I'm sure John might have a few different vocabulary words to use for that. Nonetheless, we'd love to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining me and John today. And thank you, John, for being so willing to share and open up about your very personal and challenging experiences. Take good care. We'll see you next week. And may you continue to find the pieces that fit beautifully into your health and wellness puzzle. Take care.